Afghanistan's Shia Muslims bury their dead after a suicide bomb attack on a mosque on Friday claims more than 40 lives. The number of daily COVID deaths in Russia exceeds the grim 1,000 mark. That is the country's highest single-day toll since the pandemic began. And yellow vest protesters take to the streets of French cities, including Paris, to reject their government's economic policies. Welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumisha Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Afghanistan is once again the scene of a mass burial ceremony as it lays to rest the victims of a second attack on a mosque in just a week. The bereaved Afghans said that they said their last farewells to those killed in the bomb blast targeting a Shia mosque in the southern city of Kandahar. On Friday, over 40 worshippers were killed while holding Friday prayers. That happened exactly a week after another 80 lost their lives in a similar attack in the northern city of Kunduz. Both attacks were claimed by the Daesh terrorist group. Afghanistan's new rulers, the Taliban, are now under pressure over the security situation there. They have vowed to take stronger action to protect religious sites. Mosques across Afghanistan have so far been guarded by local volunteer forces authorized to carry weapons. Moving on, the number of daily coronavirus deaths in Russia has topped 1,000 for the first time since the start of the pandemic. The new daily figure pushes the overall death toll to more than 222. Now, this is the highest in Europe. The country has also reported more than 33,200 new infections in the last 24 hours. Russia has been witnessing a steep rise in COVID cases and related deaths for the past couple of weeks. Officials blame the surge on the more contagious Delta variant and the people's reluctance to get vaccinated. Only 31% of Russians have been fully vaccinated so far. The government has also avoided imposing major restrictions despite the surge. However, some regions have reintroduced QR codes for access to public places. In the meantime, Iran is witnessing a relative decline in its daily COVID cases and related deaths as the country speeds up its vaccination program. On Saturday, Iran logged 181 deaths and more than 7,500 new cases in 24 hours. Both figures have declined compared with previous days. Total COVID deaths in Iran are now above 123,000 out of more than 5.3 million infections. The country saw its fifth wave of the disease in the summer when daily virus fatalities topped 700 on August 2nd. That was the highest single-day death tally in Iran since the start of the pandemic. The surge was brought under control just 2 weeks ago as the inoculation program speeds up. Half of the population in Iran has now received at least one dose of a COVID vaccine. And now it's time for this edition of the News Review. In this edition, yellow vest protesters have staged demonstrations across France to reject their government's economic policies. Protests were held at least in the 300 French cities and towns, including the capital, Paris. Protesters, among other things, are angry at high diesel prices. They say the prices have continued to increase since the late 2018. That is when the yellow vest demonstrations first began in France, posing a big challenge to the government of President Emmanuel Macron. Since taking office, Macron has been pushing for reforms he says are necessary for economic progress, but ordinary people say his policies have put pressure on them. The yellow vests have returned to the streets after their protests died down in the past months due to COVID-19. Now, for more on that, we're joined by our correspondent Ramin Mazahiri, who is with us live from Paris, and also Paolo Raffone, co-founder and CEO of the CIPI Foundation from Brussels. Thank you very much to both of you. Let's begin with our correspondent, Ramin Mazahiri. If you could please tell us more about this new season, as you described, of the Yellow Vest movement.
Yes, France's most repressed political group, the Yellow Vest, they have just premiered what they are calling Season 2. As you mentioned, it was over 300 cities and towns planned to have demonstrations. And it's the first time that they've demonstrated in more than a year and a half due to coronavirus restrictions. They actually began, it was almost 3 years ago, they first put on their yellow vests, which are required, which are reflective gear that are required to have in your car here in France. And they were in response to regressive fuel tax hikes amid diesel gas price records. While energy costs, including diesel, just hit records again, and the yellow vests are back on the streets. You know, the Yellow Vests were essentially the biggest class-based political movement in the West in the 21st century. But they were also incredibly popular. Here in France, they always had a approval rating around 60%, and they inspired international emulation. Some 30 countries started their own Yellow Vest movement. That's even though they were falsely smeared with charges of xenophobia. They held marches against anti-Semitism, and at the march today in Paris, their leading banner was of a Muslim woman wearing a hijab. I think many people will remember how President Macron's hardline policies provoked international condemnation, because from November 2018 until about June 2019, every Saturday in Paris was just a war zone. And the world was shocked, or they were just shocked at French-style democracy, which uses indiscriminate tear gas. It attacks peaceful protesters with rubber bullets and violence, all while still claiming to be this beacon of political and human rights. The Yellow Vest list of demands are, you know, basically a call to rethink all of France's major political policies, everything from leaving the European Union and the Eurozone and NATO, to redistribution of wealth, to green energy policies. What they want is open public debate and referendums on these basic issues. I would say that they're calling for a cultural revolution, basically. To sum up, they are going to keep marching, they said, every Saturday until at least France's election in April. And that could be a major black eye for President Emmanuel Macron.
Exactly, and that's the question I would like to address Mr. Raffone with. Do you believe, how could this affect Macron's popularity? Do you think he will have any policies to bring these people back to the voting polls in order to vote for him?
Well, I do not think that he will even attempt to try to have these people vote for him. This is out of question. They will never do it. What he can try to do is to reduce the effect of the protest, maybe promising some kind of appeasement measures. However, for the time being, I mean, the protest is important because it resurged after a long time. But it has not caused a major impact yet in the country. We have to see if it will evolve in further protests in the next weeks. Certainly, it's a signal to Macron's policies, reminding him that the mood of a significant part of the population is not in his favor. And the turmoil at political level in France is quite big because, as you know, there are still several candidates competing on the right side to Macron, and there is one specific candidate, or better, future-to-be candidate, he still didn't disclose his candidature, which is Mr. Zemmour, who may be a joker in the game for the presidential elections. So France is entering now a very unquiet time that may evolve also to towards further demonstrations and even confrontation with the current administration and presidency.
Mr. Raffan, one quick question. Were you expecting these demonstrations, the Yellow Vest demonstrations, to resume, or after it died down because of the coronavirus pandemic, you thought that it would be forgotten?
I do not think they could be forgotten. I mean, they were deep-rooted in the society outside of the capital, especially the repression that has taken place in France against this movement has been very significant. But through repression, you don't make disappear the reasons for protesting. So it would have been quite ingenuous to believe that this movement wouldn't reappear, especially with the hardship that now is re-emerging with the increase of energy costs.
Thank you very much. Now let's bring back Ramin Mazahiri. How successful do you see this movement in the future?
It's a very good question. I think that their international impact is undeniable, and the admiration that people have for them is undeniable. But their impact domestically is going to be limited because the French government, through their repression, has made it so scary for people to join them. Back when they started, they were regularly drawing hundreds of thousands of people every Saturday. But when they see these images of protesters getting tear gassed, protesters getting beaten, rubber bullets, people losing an eye, people even dying, that really scares people off. And then we have to combine this with the fact that the French mainstream media is owned, all of the major media is owned by just a handful of billionaires, and they are going to do everything they can to ignore, to distort, and to slander the Yellow Vests. So, and then, a third point to make is this is a decentralized movement that rejects any leaders, and that makes it difficult for them to translate their, enormous popularity into political victory. So they kind of hamstring themselves, but the state hamstrings them, and so does private rich, the 1%. So they're going to make an impact. They are supported, but they are going to be ignored and slandered and portrayed as just kind of the worst parts of France, which they are not. I have covered all more demonstrations by the Elevists than probably any reporter in English or French. And these are very, very politically involved, very, very politically committed people. Unfortunately, they're just not given. They're just not in a country that has a really vibrant and free press.
I see. Thank you very much. Mr. Raffan, the last question is for you, and we have about a minute and a half to wrap this up. How do you think this movement can affect the future elections?
Well, we have to see how further they will go, but certainly it can push the electorate to go against the Macron's policy. Now, it's not given to see for the moment towards which candidate they may converge. Most probably they will contribute to a very large abstention during the elections. So, but it is a bit too early now to draw any conclusion of this sort.
Thank you very much, Mr. Paolo Raffone, co-founder and CEO of the CIPI Foundation, live from Brussels, and also our very own Ramin Mazahiri, who has been covering these Yellow Vest protests from the beginning, live from Paris. Thank you very much to both of you, gentlemen. Moving on, Italian trade unionists gather in Rome to protest against fascism after last week's violent protests led to an attack on the union's headquarters in the capital. The rally was organized by several labor unions who called for the legal dissolution of all pro-fascist organizations in the country. Calls to abolish neo-fascist movements have gained momentum in recent weeks after protests against the COVID pass turned violent. Last week, far-right groups exploited angry protests and stormed the headquarters of a trade union and a hospital. In the same week, far-right members infiltrated protesters and tried to raid official residences of Italy's prime minister. The violence was widely condemned by lawmakers who presented a motion in parliament for neo-fascist movements to be dissolved. British police have declared the fatal stabbing of a Conservative Party lawmaker a terrorist incident. The Metropolitan Police say that the early investigation has revealed a potential motivation linked to extremism. A 25-year-old British man of Somali origin was arrested at the crime scene in Laon-Sea Town, east of London. Police say they are not seeking anyone else over the murder. The veteran MP was talking to voters at a church when he was stabbed to death on Friday. Lawmakers are now pressing for tougher security. Home Secretary Priti Patel has ordered police across the country to review security arrangements for all 650 MPs. 69-year-old Amez was the second sitting lawmaker murdered in just over 5 years. Joe Cox from the Labour Party was killed in 2016 while meeting his constituents. Now, with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Health experts have warned against what they called a twindemic of COVID-19 and flu this coming winter season, according to a news report. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Elisha Machado, journalist. This article is published under the heading Health experts warn of possible twindemic as flu season approaches. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. as COVID-19 cases continue to drop and people scale back on protocols, doctors say there is concern that more people will catch the flu this year than last year. Health experts are warning of what could be a twindemic this year as flu season approaches during the COVID-19 pandemic. Doctors say the last flu season was mild because people were limiting social gatherings and wearing masks. The U.S. is gearing up in case of a bad flu season on top of the continuing COVID-19 crisis, with a plea for Americans to get vaccinated against both. Dr. Rachel Walensky, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said, "I get it. We are all tired of talking about vaccines, but it is doubly important this year to get your flu shot," added Walensky, who got her own vaccination earlier this week, just as she has every year since she was a medical student in 1995. She said, "We are preparing for the return of the flu in the U.S. However, as coronavirus cases continue to drop and people scale back on these protocols, there is concern that more and more people will catch the flu this year than last year. There is no doubt that this year the flu season will be worse than last year, but that's because last year was so good. There were very little cases." Dr. Olise Wu, Chief Epidemiologist and System Director of Infectious Diseases for Hartford Healthcare, said. Wu anticipates flu cases will have a similar timeline as previous years, with sporadic cases through October, with more showing up in November and December before a peak in February. But he expects the flu could affect more people this year than last year. The two main reasons, flu shot hesitancy and people not wearing masks as much. Wu added, "There are some masking mandates, but for the most part, there is not mandated masking, and so because of that, this is a respiratory transmitted disease, and by science alone, when you take away a barrier, you are going to have more cases of influenza." As healthcare providers keep an eye on both viruses, there are some steps you can take to stay safe this flu season. Vaccination is still the primary way to prevent that, and I'd encourage everyone, including kids, to go out and get that flu shot this year. That's one really important step for prevention. Dr. David Banich with the Infectious Diseases Department at UConn Health said, "The masks provide that higher level of protection, so in crowded indoor environments, that can be helpful as well. Doctors are also recommending masking up for gatherings along with getting vaccinated and having outdoor get-togethers."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now let's listen to the speech of Sheikh Jafar Jafar.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We know that there are many dimensions to our association and our loyalty to the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. There is a spiritual level of wilaya. There is a physical level of wilaya. There is an obedience level of wilaya. But there is also an emotional connection of wilaya, right? And it comes to one of my favorite traditions. But the tradition is from Amirul Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa Ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum. Is when he's reported to have said, Inna Allaha tabaraka wa ta'ala ittala'a ila al-ardi fakhtarana. He says that indeed Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala peered over the world and He selected us, yani the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, wa akhtara lana shi'a. And He then selected, again, looking out over the world, this is an analogy basically that Imam alayhi salam is giving here, but he's describing something for us. And he says, then He peered out over the world and He selected for us Shia, followers. Yansurunana, and these, the job of the Shia is what? They help us, they assist us. And this adds, this covers the different levels of wilaya that we talked about. But then he says that these Shia as well, يَفْرَحُونَ لِفَرْحِنَا وَيَحْزُنُونَ لِحُزْنِنَا. Subhanallah. And these Shia are happy when we are happy, and they are sad when we are sad. I love this tradition, right? It shows the power, of wilaya. And when we use and utilize this wilaya in its different dimensions, not only mentally am I connected to them, spiritually I'm connected to them, physically I'm in obedience to them, but even my emotions are based on their emotions. That when they are happy, I am happy. When they are sad, I am sad. That is a beautiful point of wilaya. And another dimension of wilaya that the Imam alayhi salam describes, and inshallah we are amongst those Shia who meet the criterias of wilaya, and that we will be resurrected as amongst the Shia that is described here, inshallah. What is important for us as we make this transition out of the period of Aza is that we don't lose our connection to the lessons that we have learned over this period, and that we don't stop being Husseini in all circumstances of our lives. And you know, one of the important lessons that I want us to make sure we don't forget is the readiness and the willingness to join the Imam of the time. This is something that is very clear when we look at Karbala, that there were three groups of people, right? There were one who rejected the Imam. Inshallah, we are not amongst them. There's a second group who accepted and were ready and were willing to leave everything behind to join the Imam. And inshallah, we are amongst them. But then there is this third group as well, who were undecided. They had commitments here and there. They were afraid of Ibn Ziyad. There were so many circumstances. And they lost out, right? They lost out because that opportunity came and that opportunity went. And they remained then amongst the Tawwabin, right? Amongst those who are repentant and others who regretted. This is an important lesson, to be ready for the Imam of the time. And this is where we come back to our 11th Imam alayhi salam, that out of the many, many things that the 11th Imam did, out of the turath and the legacies that the Imam alayhi salam left, one of the most significant and important ones was to prepare and ready the ummah for the ghaybat of the Imam. And not only prepare and ready them for the ghaybat of the Imam, but then also prepare them to be ready for his return. And this is what I want to talk about today. I think it's so important, because when we look at the life of, I think generally speaking, now this is generalization, but after the sixth Imam, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, 11th, there's not much that we know about our a'imma alayhim as-salam, you know. And forgive me if you are one who knows, and I don't mean that you don't know. But as the Shia, there's not much that we really value and recognize. But when we look at our 11th Imam, I want to spend some time describing for us the groundwork he laid. It was simply, it was needed, and it was done beautifully. To today, we still benefit from the groundworks that were laid by our Imams. So there are numerous measures that the Imam alayhi salam took. And we'll just describe a few, and there are many more that are also mentioned in the books of Tariq, that what he did to prepare us for ghaibah, and then inshallah our return, preparing for the return of the Imam alayhi salam as well. And so that's another thing that the Imam alayhi salam did, was he created this wakil, this agents who would handle the affairs of the Imam alayhi salam. Thus the people were not so reliant upon the Imam. And the third thing is that Imam alayhi salam even referred people to religious experts. And he said, go and have them answer your questions. And we get this very famous tradition that talks about taqleed, where he says, if there's anyone amongst my fuqaha, those who are learned, who has control over himself, who protects his religion, suppresses their desires, and is obedient to the commands of the master, then people should follow him and emulate him in all their affairs. These steps that the Imam alayhi salam took were masterful, honestly. That today, the legacy of the A'imma alayhim as-salam has passed on. It's not that it stopped in ghaibah. The fuqaha, the ulama have taken it over. The agents now who are our top al-ulama, may Allah give them a long life, inshaAllah, carry on this tradition that we have. But obviously this wasn't easy, right? Because to change the mindset of the people is not easy. It's difficult. I mean, we experienced this with COVID. The fact that we had to close our mosques and it came during Muharram, it wasn't easy for people to accept that there are certain measures that we have to take for our precaution. Now imagine this particular, where the people were being told now that you won't see the Imam, and the Imam is a 5-year-old and you won't see him again. It wasn't easy, but these steps that the Imam alayhi salam took shows us the difficulty of ghaibah, that it's not an easy place to be. Now I want us to focus on this, okay? Because the time of ghaibah is not meant to be easy.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Ali.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Making a biodegradable material strong enough to replace plastic is a tough task, but scientists are trying to do just that. We now present you an article written by Laura Patterson. The piece is titled "The Future of Plastic Alternatives." It comes from bacteria and goes back to bacteria. The article has been taken from the British newspaper The Guardian. When people think about plastic waste, they often think of the packaging that swaddles supermarket fruits and vegetables, shiny layers that are stripped away and thrown in the bin as soon as the produce is unloaded at home. It's a wasteful cycle that California-based company, Appeal, says it can help end. The firm has developed an edible, tasteless and invisible plant-based spray for fruits and vegetables that works as a barrier to keep oxygen out and moisture in, increasing shelf life without the need for single-use plastic. It's currently being sprayed onto cucumbers and avocados at retailers including Walmart. The CEO of Walmart, James Rogers, said, "We're showing that you can actually reimagine a food system that's not built on the foundation of single-use plastic." Appeal, which is valued at $2 billion, is part of a wave of startups and scientific projects racing to develop materials that could help replace traditional single-use plastics. Their production methods and applications vary widely, but their stated aim is the same: to end the scourge of plastic waste. Since the 1950s, the world has produced an estimated 8.3 billion tons of plastics, nearly two-thirds of which has ended up in landfill sites or leaching into soil, rivers, and oceans. Choking wildlife, plastics are a driver of the climate crisis. The vast majority are made from fossil fuels, and if global production continues on current trends, plastics may account for about 20% of oil consumption by mid-century. The problem is that fossil-based plastics are not easy to replace. Plastic is a wonder material, cheap to produce, lightweight, and incredibly durable. The latter is a great quality in use, but not when it ends up in a landfill site or the environment. Plastic can take centuries to degrade. Finding a material that is strong but can be essentially self-destruct when needed is incredibly tough. But plenty of scientists and companies are trying to do just that. We'll be right back. Bioplastics have emerged as a popular alternative, even if they currently make up less than 1% of the market. Made from biosources such as sugarcane, algae, even banana waste, and shellfish, many pitch themselves as eliminating the need for fossil fuels and also breaking down easily after use. Sarah Kakadelis, a researcher in plastic pollution at Imperial College, University of London, said these green claims do not always stand up to scrutiny. If the raw material is not sourced sustainably, bioplastics could end up increasing deforestation to clear land and competing with food production. They also do not always break down as easily as advertised, sometimes taking years. And others require industrial composting facilities, which can be scarce. Some companies say they have cracked these problems. The Dutch biochemicals company Avantium, which has partnered with brands such as Carlsberg, has developed a 100% plant-based plastic made from sugars that can be used for bottles and firms. The company says its plastic is 100% recyclable, has a significantly lower carbon footprint than fossil-based plastics, and is sourced from sustainably grown plants. If this plastic falls out of the recycling stream, trials have shown that it takes about a year to decompose in an industrial composer. According to initial results from a long-term study with the University of Amsterdam, left in the environment, the plastic starts to degrade after a year. Avantium plans to open its first plant in 2023 in the Netherlands and predicts its packaging will be in supermarkets in just 3 years' time. Other companies are developing plastics that avoid the need for crops altogether. In September, the British-based biotech startup Shellworks launched a plastic made from microbes found in many maritime and soil environments. These feed on carbon sources, building up a fat-like energy storage system. Shellworks co-founder Amir Afshar said, "When his fat is extracted, it behaves exactly like plastic. The difference is, when it returns to nature, the same bacteria see it as food and start to eat it." Afshar said it comes from bacteria and then goes back to bacteria. The company has signed deals with beauty companies to work on products such as tubes, bottles and compacts, which often end up in landfill sites. Co-founder Insia Jafarji said, "When people have finished with Shellworks products, they can be treated like food waste and composted with no special infrastructure needed." Other scientists are trying to turn plastic into a tool for tackling the climate crisis by making plastics from greenhouse gases. Kakadelis said, "One could see in the future capturing carbon dioxide from the air and then using that to produce plastic." Scientists at Rutgers University have developed technology that can turn water and carbon dioxide into precursors for various plastics, which they say could replace PET and polyester fiber, ubiquitous in the fashion industry. About 60% of materials made into clothing is from plastics. Anders Lawson, the chief executive officer of Renew Carbon Dioxide, the startup spun out of Rutgers University research, said the method is essentially replicating nature's process for making oil and gas over millions of years, but doing so in a fraction of a second. The company hopes to harness the CO2 emitted from plastics as they decompose or are incinerated and use it to create new products. Renew Carbon Dioxide is building a pilot plant and expects to reach commercialization in 2025. Increasing consumer pushback on plastics has also led some companies to trial completely different materials. Mars and Unilever are experimenting with paper, which is widely recycled and less harmful than plastics if it ends up in the sea or at a landfill site. This summer, Coca-Cola begins testing a paper bottle in Hungary for one of its drinks, in partnership with Copenhagen-based startup Pabuco, which makes bottles from molded FSC-certified paper pulp. However, these bottles still have a plastic lid and are lined with a recycled PET plastic film, which keep the product from leaking or paper fibers from getting in. Pabuco's interim chief executive officer, Gitan Shield, said, "Our ultimate vision is to develop a fully bio-based paper bottle that can also be recyclable in the paper stream." Sander de Vreugde, who leads the new plastics economy initiative at the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, said the big question for these innovations are, where is the material sourced from and where does it end up? For example, paper isn't a sustainable packaging material if it contributes to deforestation, or if the paper bottles and sweet wrappers don't make it into the recycling streams. It is also likely to take many years before these materials can scale up enough to make a dent in the 300 million tons of plastics recovered and produced every year. Mark Miodonic, Professor of Materials and Society at University College London, worries about the proliferation of materials being developed without enough thought about how they fit into existing waste systems. He said, "Mostly what we want to do is actually make plastics that are very durable, and we want to keep them in the stream. So we want to recycle." Where he thinks biodegradability and compostability makes sense are products such as caddy liners for food waste bins, tea bags. Why include the plastic that's going to last you 100 years into a tea bag? That's crazy. And hygiene products. Products with very short shelf lives could also suit compostable packaging. London-based Notpla makes plastic replacements from seaweed, a fast-growing carbon sequestering plant which breaks down anywhere within a few weeks. Co-founder Pierre Paslier said, "It's targeted at places where we pick something, we consume it, and it's over within minutes. And that's really where plastic is the worst material, because it's going to be around forever." Notpla's edible Uho water bubbles were handed to runners at the 2019 London Marathon. It has also partnered with the delivery service Just Eat to provide compostable condiment sachets that can be put straight into the household food waste bins, and has developed a seaweed coating to replace the plastic lining on cardboard takeaway boxes. Sander de Vreugde said materials innovation is one part of the puzzle, but truly dealing with plastic waste requires a hierarchy of action. Eliminate as much plastic as possible, then use recycled plastic. Finally, where virgin plastic are still required, use renewable feedstocks. He added, "It really needs to be done in that order." Miodonic said scientists, engineers and companies may be tempted to look at plastic and say, "Let's swap it for another thing, and that's now solved." But the truth is, you have to redesign the whole system if you're going to solve the problem.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A few words of advice to eulogists. The 3rd of February, 2021. When some of the people in the camp of the Commander of the Faithful began to curse the army of Muawiyah, he, Imam Ali alayhi salam, asked them to stop it. I dislike you starting to abuse them. This is Fatimi and Alawi behavior. I will tell you that fortunately today, the promotional organizations of the country are moving towards perfection and transcendence. Good tasks are being carried out in deep, intellectual, and scholarly areas in Islamic seminaries. Fortunately, we have witnessed the manifestation and reflection of this in the area of eulogies. In last year's month of Muharram and Ramadan, during which the coronavirus had already spread, we witnessed that you made good moves and presented beautiful works. Subhanallah, alhamdulillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Subhanallah. The increase in the Islamic Republic's power of confronting the enemy. I hope that you will continue to have the same performance to promote Islamic teachings and to be more successful on a daily basis, God willing, inshallah. You should know that the enemies will not be able to do a damn thing in confronting the Islamic Republic, as was mentioned by some of our brothers. Thankfully, Islam and the Islamic Republic are gaining more power and strength on a daily basis, both in spiritual and material areas. Of course, there are certain problems, but these problems are ups and downs that will always exist in our social life. Some people are rendering services and some are losing opportunities, but overall, our movement is progressing, God willing. I ask Allah the Exalted to bestow success on you. I will pray for you, and I ask the Imam of the age, may our souls be sacrificed for his sake, to pray for you, as his prayers will surely be answered. I hope that you too will pray for me, and I hope that Allah the Exalted will make the immaculate soul of our magnanimous Imam and the pure souls of our great martyrs satisfied and pleased with us. Greetings be upon you, and Allah's mercy and blessings.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.